situation. So if you want good, accurate information about what is happening with all the legal maneuvers, enforcement, and struggles, next hour will be your opportunity to learn more about that and also ask questions, as this is a two-way communication means. Your community radio station signing off for this week. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison, Wisconsin. You can also catch us on the web at WORTFM.org or at the App Store with the WORTFM app. Till the next week.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. Rwanda has severed all diplomatic ties with Belgium, its former colonial power, as part of a deepening row with Belgium over Rwanda's backing of a rebel insurgency in the neighbouring Democratic Republic of Congo. Eletra Naismith reports.
A Rwandan foreign ministry statement said its decision had been made after considering several factors, all of them linked to what it called Belgium's neo-colonial delusions. But Rwanda is apparently angry over what it says is Belgian lobbying for international sanctions over the Congolese conflict. M23 rebels backed by Rwanda have captured large parts of eastern Congo. Thousands have died. As Rwanda announced the expulsion of Belgian diplomats, it emerged that European Union member states had imposed sanctions on nine individuals, including Rwandan military commanders.
Canada's new Prime Minister has said his country needs to strengthen cooperation with reliable allies, such as France, on his first overseas trip since he took office last week. Mark Carney has met President Macron in Paris and is now in Britain. A big protest has been taking place in the North Macedonian town, where a nightclub fire killed 59 people at the weekend. Many of the victims of the blaze at the Pulse nightclub in Kotchani were teenagers. The demonstrators believe that corruption had allowed the improvised venue to operate with inadequate safety measures. Here's the BBC's Balkans correspondent, Guy Delaunay.
Fewer than 25,000 people live in this town, about 60 miles to the east of North Macedonia's capital, Skopje, and it seems many of them have made it to this protest, which was explicitly billed as a call for justice. Protesters blame widespread corruption and inefficiency for the disaster. Kotchani's mayor has resigned, citing his shock and heartbreak. Police are questioning current and former government officials about their role in licensing the nightclub.
The United States has told EU officials it's withdrawing from an international group investigating Russian leaders for crimes associated with the invasion of Ukraine. The move is part of a foreign policy shift by the Trump administration as it pushes for a Ukrainian peace deal. But the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the Ukrainian Parliament, Oleksandr Mereshko, says there are certain non-negotiables that must be upheld in any potential deal.
First of all, territorial integrity. So it's not negotiable. We will never agree to any territorial concessions. Second, it's about our membership in international organizations, in particular in NATO. Putin shouldn't decide that. And finally, we cannot agree to Putin's suggesting some kind of limits on our defense capabilities.
You're listening to the World News from the BBC. The Office of Britain's Prime Minister says more than 30 countries are ready to be involved in securing any peace deal in Ukraine. A spokesman for Keir Starmer told reporters that a significant number would provide troops on the ground, while others were ready to contribute with logistics and support. President Trump has warned Iran that it will face dire consequences for any further attacks by Yemen's Houthis. He said from now on, the Iranian leadership would be viewed as having pulled the trigger for every shot fired by the group, which has long been backed by Tehran. Mr. Trump's threat followed a Houthi claim to have attacked a US aircraft carrier in the Red Sea in response. The European Union has announced it's stepping up aid for Syria in the wake of the overthrow last December of Bashar al-Assad. The President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, told a donor conference in Brussels that the Syrian people needed help more than ever. She urged the interim authorities, led by Ahmed al-Shara, to create an inclusive, non-sectarian administration.
All Syrians deserve to take their future into their hands. Syria can become a country where everybody can speak their mind with equal rights and representation for all, men and women alike, beyond faith, ethnicity, and ideology, a country with no place for sectarian violence. The future of Syria is for all Syrians to build.
One of Hong Kong's richest men, the property tycoon Li Shaoqi, has died at the age of 97. His fortune was estimated to be $30 billion. Mr. Li was born in the southern Chinese province of Guangdong into a family that owned gold and silver shops. He moved to Hong Kong when he was 20, getting involved in real estate. He was also a well-known philanthropist. BBC News.
Are you fast, cheap, and easy? Hopefully not, but if you feel that way, it could be due to your food. Hello, this is local farmer food activist John Peck, inviting you to listen in on the next Access Hour, Monday, March 17th at 7 p.m. for a springtime celebration of food sovereignty. And since it is St. Patrick's Day, I may share some thoughts about why my own ancestors had to flee a green island long ago thanks to settler colonialism and a deadly famine. Food sovereignty is not just for breakfast anymore. It can help you better feed your family, support your local economy, and even cool the planet. Some questions we'll tackle include, who owns seeds? Can you fix your own tractor? Where does food come from? Why does hunger exist? Is food a weapon or a basic human right? And in between the big ideas, we'll play some great music and perhaps even read some poetry. So once again, please join me, John Peck, for a special St. Patrick's Day edition of the Access Hour, Monday, March 17th on WRT Madison, to celebrate the coming of spring through food sovereignty.
6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground.
Welcome to A Public Affair. I'm your Monday host, Douglas Haynes. On today's show, we'll devote the hour to learning about the daily realities of immigrants and migrants in Wisconsin right now and what one organization is doing to support them. Joining me are two guests with the nonprofit organization Voces de la Frontera, Wisconsin's leading immigrants' rights organization. Voces has been organizing and empowering immigrant workers and families for over 20 years. I'm very happy to have with us today Nindique Figueiredo, who is logistics coordinator at Voces de la Frontera and Voces de la Frontera Action. Bienvenido, Nindique. Welcome to A Public Affair.
Muchísimas gracias por la oportunidad y contenta de estar acá con ustedes.
De nada, estamos felices que estás aquí. And we also have with us Luis Velázquez, statewide organizer for Voces de la Frontera and Voces de la Frontera Action. Welcome, Luis.
Hi, thanks so much. Sí, muchas gracias por tenerme aquí. Thanks so much for having me here.
Thanks again for joining us. We'll move fluidly back and forth between Spanish and English today, or as fluidly as I can manage. And we appreciate everyone's making that possible for us to have a multilingual show today. Welcome, listeners, as well. We'd love to have you join our conversation. If you have a question or observation about the daily realities for immigrants and migrants in Wisconsin, give us a call, or you have an experience from your community to share, please give us a call at 608-256-2001, extension 9. Si tienen preguntas para las voces que estás escuchando aquí hoy, por favor, llámenos a 608-256-2001. 2001 y 9. Nindik, vamos a comenzar contigo. Háblanos primero de tu trabajo diario. ¿Cuáles son tus actividades principales en estos días? I'm asking Nindik just to tell us a little bit about her daily work right now with Voces de la Frontera.
Sí. Bueno, a todos los que nos escuchan, parte de ser un coordinador a medio tiempo para Voces de la Frontera, ¿verdad? Algunas de las tareas que tengo es coordinar las juntas que se ofrecen tanto en el condado de Dane como en los condados alrededor. También la promoción, ¿verdad?, de estos eventos, tratar de conectar con diferentes personas para que puedan estar allí acompañándonos en las juntas. Y también mucho trabajo administrativo, tener como todo el material que vamos a ocupar preparado, a la educación, a la comunidad, es una parte fundamental de mi trabajo, ¿verdad? Ese factor de informar a nuestra comunidad para que se sienta preparada, de poder actuar, de poder movilizarse. Voces de la Frontera es una organización que educamos, ¿verdad? Informamos a nuestra comunidad para que estén preparados, organizados y en su momento se pueda producir una movilización. Es muy difícil movilizar a nuestras comunidades si no hay un entendimiento profundo de los problemas, ¿verdad?, que están pasando. Y aunque estemos viviendo esas dificultades, esas necesidades en nuestras comunidades, si no entendemos bien cómo el sistema funciona y cómo podemos hacer para derribar esas estructuras, ¿verdad?, que nos impiden acceder a mejores derechos, a mejores beneficios, no podemos seguir adelante. Entonces, me siento bien conectada con Voces por eso, porque más que ofrecer un servicio, somos una organización que informa, organiza y moviliza a nuestra comunidad.
Gracias, Nindik. So Nindik was just talking there about the importance of Voces' work informing and mobilizing people, and a lot of her role is to prepare and then share information. Luis, I'll let you translate and add additional information now onto the work of Voces, building on what Nindik was just talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, thanks so much, Douglas. I think that you know, currently, you know, part of Voces' outreach, you know, has been in other areas that usually we haven't reached, or at least we haven't been, you know, consistently present. And so as of right now, we are in Dane County, but we've also moved towards, you know, Wisconsin Dells, Sparta, Arcadia, and Monroe. And just recently, we've been meeting with different communities in Darlington. And so, you know, part of our work, of course, is to educate, but not to educate communities in a traditional setting, but to really, you know, sit down with them and to listen, you know, to their needs, and to fully understand, because we have immigrants who have been in Wisconsin for over 20 years and who don't have a pathway for citizenship, you know, and they have, you know, U.S. citizens who are their sons and daughters, you know, cousins, and so it's really important to enter into a process of education that is, you know, shoulder to shoulder, right? And not in a hierarchical way. And that takes time. It takes time. It takes a lot of trust. It takes a lot of, you know, credibility in the community. And like you said, we've been in the state, you know, for 20 years. And then the other, you know, step, or just the other, you know, phase of this process is to really empower, right? And for example, I mean, I'm a DACA recipient, and we have organizers in our staff, but we also have, you know, leaders in the communities who have, you know, powerful stories of overcoming, you know, struggles. And the empowerment piece is key to the educational process, because as, you know, many know, to be oppressed for, you know, many years, and to be, you know, live in a reality where, you know, people are going from home to work, you know, from work, you know, to the store, and doing, you know, that cycle again, it often creates this reality where their voices are not really counted. And so, you know, part of our organizing efforts is for them to really know that they are being heard. They are being seen, right? And so then after the empowerment piece, we organize. And then we mobilize, right? And like, you know, Nindik was saying, it happens in an organic way where people feel that it is up to them, right? You know, that their voices do count. Since November 6th, we've entered into this new reality where our strategy has, you know, consisted of protection and defense. And so that has included, the Know Your Rights piece, you know, which I'll be talking about later. But our, you know, day-to-day efforts is, you know, connecting with the community, you know, meeting them where they're at. And that's in different, you know, places. It could be the store, it could be at school, it could be at their workplace. We meet, you know, monthly as well, you know, with the community. And it is a members-led organization, right? We have people who are leading this organization, who have, you know, rich experiences. And that's, I think, one, you know, unique aspect about this institution is that we are driven, you know, by the movement, you know, by the people, and it is led by immigrant workers. And so I'm really just happy to be a member as well, and staff as well, for Voces de la Frontera and Voces de la Frontera Action.
Thank you, Luis. And I definitely would like to talk more about the content of that outreach that you do and the workshops. But you just mentioned there the importance of people's stories and the powerful stories that you hear in your own organizing, and a little bit about your own story. I'm wondering if both of you could share a little bit of your own story about how you came to this work. And you can make it as long or short as you want, but what brought you to your work with Voces de la Frontera? Nindik, vamos a regresar contigo. ¿Puedes compartir un poco de tu historia personal sobre cómo encontraste este camino, este tipo de trabajo?
Sí. Nos encontramos con Voces debido a una mudanza personal que tuvimos, ¿verdad? Llegamos al estado de Wisconsin, veníamos del estado de Georgia y conocimos de Voces durante una conversación en una iglesia en el área de Eau Claire, y la conversación estaba en torno a Restore Driver's Licenses. Así conocimos a Voces y nos quedamos como bien capturados con la organización, pero por el movimiento, ¿verdad?, que hay, la contribución comunitaria que hay para seguir haciendo cambio y seguir demandando cambio en Wisconsin.
Con permiso, un momento, Nindik. Voy a compartir en inglés. Nindik is telling us that she came to Wisconsin from Georgia and first encountered Voces in Eau Claire in a church there, and got to know the movement and became very enchanted with the movement that Voces was organizing in Wisconsin. Bueno, gracias.
Yeah, y así conocimos a Voces. Fuimos voluntarios en 2020 para las elecciones presidenciales, y luego, misteriosamente, en el estado de Georgia hubo una segunda vuelta para las sillas del Senado, el asiento del Senado, y Voces envió una organización de voluntarios para sumar en el esfuerzo de Georgia, y así nos enviaron a nosotros, y fue como bien místico porque era el estado de donde nosotros estábamos yendo a Wisconsin y otra vez regresar para hacer fuerza y ganar esos dos asientos en el Senado. Fue algo muy lindo, y ya desde 2021 he sido parte del staff de Voces de la Frontera.
Gracias, gracias por compartir. So Nindik was just telling us that sort of miraculously, she was connected with Voces there near Eau Claire, and it was in 2020, at the time of the 2020 presidential election, and she connected with Voces de la Frontera, who sent a voluntary delegation to Georgia to participate in the vote recount for the Senate election there. And that was where her story really with Voces, or her deep involvement with Voces, began, and she became part of the team with Voces in 2021. Muchas gracias, Nedic, por compartir tu historia. Y Luis, what would you like us to know about your story?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that, you know, my story is like many, you know, millions of immigrants here in the country who, you know, many of them have been in the States and have worked and have paid their taxes and have been, you know, diligent and, you know, disciplined in making sure that everything is in order. And unfortunately, there isn't a pathway for citizenship. The immigration system is broken. And I mean, you know, personally, as a DACA recipient and also having, you know, been raised in Georgia and having, you know, gotten my bachelor's and my master's, it is hard. I mean, it is hard to have a society where your immigration status will dictate, you know, your future. And we have a lot of immigrants who couldn't apply for DACA. You know, potentially your listeners may recall that it was around, you know, 2017 and 2018 that DACA began to be dismantled. And so, you know, renewals are not able to be passed, you know, for DACA. It's just, you know, DACA. I'm sorry. So DACA renewals are the only way that people can continue to receive DACA, but they no longer receive new applications for DACA. And so I empathize and I stand in solidarity with a lot of, you know, young adults who were not able to apply for DACA, like myself. And it's heartbreaking to hear these stories that they didn't make it for a few months. And so, you know, one of the amazing things about, you know, Voces de la Frontera and Voces de la Frontera Action, because Voces does have a political arm in which, you know, this organization is able to endorse candidates. And that's the story that Nindy was sharing, that, you know, Voces de la Frontera Action, you know, was able to send a delegation to Georgia to knock on doors, you know, for the election in 2020. And so, you know, my story is one of many who are in the struggle, who unfortunately are not able to receive any type of benefit. But beyond that, you know, the repression and the attacks that the immigrant community is feeling at this time is just is great. And I know that we'll be talking about it later. But yeah, I'm so happy to be part of Voces, and it is a community, it is a family that is just striving for, you know, workers and immigrants to have rights as everyone else does.
Thank you, Luis. I'd just like to follow up quickly about DACA, and then we will talk about some of the many topics that you have brought up. So DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Can you tell us a little bit more about its current status? You mentioned that people can no longer apply for renewal and also no longer apply at all. Is that, did I hear you right, that it's not sort of continuing the program?
Correct. So with DACA right now, so current DACA recipients are able to continue to renew their status.
Okay.
So whoever applied and have, you know, received DACA, they're able, you know, we are able to continue to renew our status. However, the processing of new DACA application, you know, remains on hold.
Okay.
There has been different, you know, legal challenges since 2017. And more recently, the Fifth Circuit of Court of Appeals ruled that certain parts of the DACA program is to be unlawful, but the court did not order an immediate and action, you know, to DACA. And so, you know, renewals are continuing to happen. And eventually it is suspected that it will end up at the Supreme Court again, with a decision to potentially come in as late as summer of this year or next year.
And would that decision, Luis, potentially invalidate DACA altogether, or just not allow the program to continue new people to apply for DACA status?
Potentially, it will invalidate the whole program. So I think I suspected that 800 to a million people are recipients of DACA. It's a potentially this, you know, Supreme Court decision can invalidate DACA, which will leave, you know, people like myself in a limbo.
Yeah, a very important decision then, obviously, coming up that we'll be paying attention to. I want to remind everyone that you're listening to A Public Affair on WRT 89.9 FM. My name is Douglas Haynes, and I'm talking today with Nindique Figueiredo and Luis Velasquez from the nonprofit organization Voces de la Frontera. We would love to have you join our conversation today. If you have a question or observation about the daily realities for immigrants and migrants in Wisconsin or an experience from your community you'd like to share, you can give us a call at 608-256-2001, extension 9. Luis, I'd like to come back to you, and then we'll hear from Nindique as well again about the fear that you mentioned you are hearing a lot in immigrant communities at this time here in Wisconsin. Can you tell us some stories or experiences that you've had recently that can kind of give us a window into this experience of fear that many people are having?
Yes, absolutely. So through the Know Your Rights program, we've been able to sit in with folks, you know, from different you know, sectors of the immigrant community statewide. So we've been in places like, you know, Blanchardville, in places like Sparta, Arcadia, Dane County. We've, you know, been, you know, partnering up with educators, with farm owners as well, just more recently, and with workers as well who have been fearful of just hearing the outpouring of changes in the administration in terms of immigration. And so, you know, for example, the birthright, you know, citizenship that was passed on the first day, that led to a lot of fear and anxiety of what to do if a parent has a U.S. citizen and the parent may not have a legal status. From, you know, from that to the registry order as well, that was just, proclaimed a week or 2 weeks ago.
Tell us a little bit more about that registry order, Luis.
Yep. So the registry, I mean, essentially it is an administrative, you know, directive asking all immigrants who don't have a legal status, you know, to register online. It has not been completely announced how, right? But it was, you know, proclaimed as something that immigrants who don't have a legal status, you know, have to do, or else they are going to be facing, you know, criminal you know, persecution. And so all of these changes of policy, which at times have been very confused and unclear and incomplete, has driven just immigrant families to, you know, to reaching out to us. And so there is anxiety and fears, and you know, has been shared that some parents have not sent, you know, their children to school. Some workers in the dairy industry, you know, have not, you know, showed up to work. So since, you know, January 20th, unfortunately, there's been a lot of, you know, false alarms due to all of these, you know, rapid changes in the administration that has led to kids, you know, not going to school, to workers just, you know, missing out, you know, some days because there's an idea that, you know, ICE is going to just show up in a workplace. And so part of our message has been a message of, you know, resilience and solidarity, a message of information, just making sure that we know all the facts first before making those, you know, decisions of not, you know, sending, you know, their children to school. And so there definitely is a palpable fear and anxiety. And so the Know Your Rights program, you know, has been something that has been vetted by our attorney. So we have an in-house immigration attorney who works statewide. We also have an immigration attorney who is part of our board. And so we have a Know Your Rights, you know, presentation that we, you know, have been showing to families and talking to them about, you know, the new changes. And also, you know, having a legal, you know, resource in presence as well for he or she to share more about these changes. And so what we hear a lot is, if these changes are happening, You know, is it something that we could, you know, just move, you know, to another state, or could we just, you know, go back and look for a different place to work? So there's been definitely a lot of, you know, repression that immigrants have been feeling in the last few weeks, and just confusion, just confusion about what really is happening. And so Voces de la Frontera has a crisis, you know, hotline number that has been active since January 20th. And we've received over 500 calls, you know, since then, either, you know, just, you know, from an immigrant, you know, family or person just trying to, you know, really, you know, verify if ICE indeed is in their neighborhood or workplace. Because, again, there has been a lot of, you know, false alarms in social media. And so we have what we call defense teams. And, you know, part of their work is to also make sure that indeed, if there is a false alarm, if there is a false alarm about ICE, you know, just trying to make sure first, you know, to verify that it is ICE or not. And second, if there is a detention, you know, that has occurred, you know, making sure that we are supporting the family who has been impacted. And so this, you know, crisis, you know, hotline number is a number that is available, you know, for immigrant families who may be fearful or anxious. And that's one way that we have been able to, you know, calm the waters, if you will, right? Because people feel more anxious and more fearful if they don't know the whole information. And so we've held workshops in schools, at churches, in farms as well. One story that I can share, you know, just recently I was given a workshop in a farm, and there was a 13-year-old who was born in Wisconsin, and whose parents are undocumented. They've been here 18 years, and they've, you know, been farming the land for many years. And he had some red cards, you know, which are the Know Your Rights cards, and I took some. And he said to us in the workshop, I mean, a 13-year-old, you know, was commenting on an adult educational workshop, and he said, I've been doing this as well, you know, with my parents. I've been sharing these, you know Your Rights cards to my friends, because I don't want, you know, I don't want people who are innocent to be in, you know, detained like my parents. And that was something that really, you know, just sort of, I mean, it really was impactful for me. You know, here is a 13-year-old who is in middle school, and he is just trying to do his part on educating and informing, you know, his peers, because he knows that his parents are in risk. And so there is a lot of U.S. citizens who are, you know, just being, you know, traumatized because of this administration who's creating so much chaos and so much unnecessary changes, you know, that are leading to fear. And so part of Voces, you know, strategy, of course, is protection and defense, you know, just making sure that we organize communities to defend themselves, right, to know their constitutional rights, because this is, you know, nothing new. You know, this is their rights as someone who is living in this country. And so part of what we, you know, talk about is if indeed ICE does, you know, show up in their home, if ICE does, you know, show up in their workplace, what are their rights? Because even though they may not have a legal status, they still have rights as a person. They still have a dignity. And so that's something that we, you know, talk about with, you know, families across the state, you know, making sure that they know their rights and making sure that we do have a legal resource as well. Because, you know, Dane County, for example, we work in collaboration with Centro Hispano. We work with different organizations that offer immigration legal resource. And so we want to do this in collaboration with other organizations that are serving the community. And so it's been a strategy of protection and defense. And we've seen it at work with families who tell us, you know, like, this is valuable information that I didn't know. And so we have a red card that is a foldable red card that has the emergency line number, that has their constitutional rights, and that lists also their rights. And so people are carrying these cards in their pockets, in their cards, and that has allowed for families to feel, you know, a bit of more ease in the midst of so much chaos and uncertainty at a national level.
Thank you, Luis. Nindik, vamos a regresar a ti. Y también quiero preguntarte sobre tu perspectiva sobre la comunidad, lo que estás escuchando de la gente sobre tu situación, su temor, su ansiedad, o también si estás mirando que la gente está cambiando su rutina diaria. Ahora, so I'm asking Nandik for her perspective on what Luis was just describing, the emotions people are experiencing and whether or not they're changing their daily habits right now in response to Trump administration immigration-related policies.
Mm-hmm. Sí, ciertamente he visto mucho desde que supimos los resultados electorales en noviembre. Pues hubo mucha ansiedad y mucho temor en nuestra comunidad inmigrante, especialmente porque pues muchos ya habíamos escuchado todas esas demandas, ¿no?, que había hecho el hoy presidente electo, ¿no?, todas sus su propuesta de campaña, ¿verdad?, y todas sus acciones, lo que iban a hacer. Entonces, creo que es... vi mucho miedo en ese tiempo, inclusive yo estaba viviendo un tiempo de mucha ansiedad. Pero algo que Luis está diciendo ha sido los talleres, el programa de Conoce Tus Derechos. Y para mí eso ha sido poderoso, ver a la comunidad, encontrarnos en esos talleres, ir a informarse, a conocer un poquito más sobre nuestros derechos o cómo interactuar, ¿verdad?, si hay alguna situación con agentes. Eso ha sido muy poderoso, de ver cómo la comunidad, aún con su temor, con el miedo que hay, ¿verdad?, con los cambios en su rutina que hay, porque he escuchado de nuestra comunidad que dicen que, bueno, ya no voy tanto a la calle, ¿no? Ahora solo voy, si antes iba por 3 horas, ahora solo voy por media hora. Uh-huh. Ya no paso tiempo fuera de mi casa, ¿verdad? Entonces, aún con esa ansiedad y ese temor, ese miedo a lo desconocido, ¿verdad?, que pueda pasar, nos estamos encontrando en estos talleres. Y estos talleres han servido para traer a la mesa todo eso y entre comunidad ir sanándonos, ir aprendiendo, ir formándonos cómo vamos a hacer para protegernos. Tenemos los comités de respuesta rápida, ¿verdad? Tenemos los comités para seguir informando a la comunidad por medio de Conoce Tus Derechos. Y nuestra comunidad está siendo parte de eso. Han sido espacios muy bonitos para encontrarnos y sanar.
Gracias, Nandik. So I'll try to capture at least some of the very lovely detailed description Nandik just gave us of the situation that she's seeing in the community since November, as Nandik said, with the election, re-election of Donald Trump. The fear and anxiety that has been growing in the community. But Nandik was just really stressing how empowering it has been, even for her, experiencing anxiety and fear, to meet with other members of the community through these workshops that Voces de la Frontera is running, even again as people report fear of not going out, fear of staying out long, for example, on a shopping trip, they might go out for 3 hours, half an hour instead of 3 hours. And just the will that people have, especially through this campaign of Voces de la Frontera, to know your rights, to continue learning and learning how to protect themselves. Entonces, gracias, Nandik, por compartir. Yeah. Luis, I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit about how day-to-day life right now is similar or different for undocumented people versus people who have come recently and are waiting for asylum hearings with legal permission to stay and work in the U.S. So people who might have come during the Biden administration, asked for asylum at the border, and then were given legal permission to stay until their hearing, their asylum hearing. Are they experiencing sort of different realities right now than other people without papers?
Yep. So part of what we offer in Dane and, you know, surrounding areas for the community is if someone has an appointment, an immigration appointment in Milwaukee, or in another side, I mean, it could be, you know, Chicago or, you know, Waukegan, is we offer rides, and we do this in coordination with Dane Sanctuary Coalition. And so we've been taking folks there, and what we hear is that there's a whole lot of fear. You know, just recently we took a family over there, and even though only one person, you know, had the appointment, he was advocating for himself to take his whole family because he thought it would be the last time. And so he has a daughter, you know, who's 3 years old, and a wife and a cousin. And we worked, everything out where, you know, they could go together in the car. And it really felt like a farewell, even though it wasn't. And so he had, you know, his biometrics scheduled and everything, which is a very, you know, routinary step of the process. It shouldn't be a big deal, you know. So this is a person who is, you know, running away from a country that's torn in war, and he was being persecuted there. And he, you know, has, I think, all the arguments, right, to make a case, right? Because, you know,
for asylum, you're saying.
Right. Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm. For asylum. Yeah. So thank you for that. So he has, I mean, applied for asylum since 2022. And so it was just sad to see the whole situation where he is going through this phase of fear and anxiety. And, you know, I mean, everything happened as it was. It was an appointment that was less than 40 minutes long, right? And he was just very happy to make it out, you know? And so I think what we are seeing is we're seeing, you know, families like that who are going through this process, who are feeling more fearful and anxious. And in general, I think, you know, something else to keep in mind is that those who have come more recently in the last 1 year, I know of at least one case where we have, made sure that, you know, this person has a legal representation, but he crossed the border in 2023. And right now he presented himself to the court and everything. And what he was, you know, sharing with us is that he was giving a letter, and unfortunately he's not able to move forward because he's been in the States less than 2 years. And so we have to keep in mind that part of the changes that has happened in the administration is that anyone who has been in the States less than 2 years qualify for a fast track of deportation. And so that is something to really keep in mind, and something that we're sharing in these workshops is that if you have been here in the U.S. for less than 2 years, it is important for you to know your rights, right? And for you to know that this administration is seeking for a fast track deportation. So it has changed completely, you know, to your point. It has changed completely because people who have been here, even though they may have applied for asylum, they are at risk.
And even experiencing risk if they're, or a feeling of risk if they are going through the process, as you just described with that story. Thank you for sharing that. I want to remind everybody that you're listening to A Public Affair on WRT 89.9 FM. I'm Douglas Haynes, and I'm talking today with Nindique Figueiredo and Luis Velasquez from the nonprofit organization Voces de la Frontera. We would love to have you join us still. There is time to give us a call if you have a question or observation about the daily realities for immigrants and migrants in Wisconsin right now, or you have an experience from your community to share. You can call us at 608-256-2001, extension 9. Luis, I'd like to return to you with a more specific question, because one of the things I'd like to take the opportunity to do today with both of you on is for people to get information they might not otherwise be getting elsewhere right now, for you to tell us a little bit about AB 24 and what's happening on the state level with policy related to immigrants right now. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much for the question. So AB 24, it is a statewide It is a legislation policy that is being proposed, and it is very dangerous because up front it is a law that will allow, that forces the sheriff counties to work with ICE.
Okay.
And so up front it says that it is a proposal that only with people who have a felony charge will get reported to ICE. But if you read the whole proposal, it essentially allows anyone who doesn't have a legal status to be reported by the sheriff to ICE. So essentially it is 287G statewide. And for those, listeners and for people who, have been connected and struggle for, for immigrant and worker rights, 287G, it is a more, formal deal or collaboration with ICE. And it puts people at risk who don't have a legal status, who are working, day in and day out, who have children who are, who are U.S. citizens. And so AB 24 was a proposal that was proposed by Republicans in the legislature. And there is a hearing that is going to be tomorrow, March 18th at 2 p.m. And it has gone through the Public Safety Committee. And so it is, heading out to a vote. And again, this is a proposal that, potentially could be turned into law as soon as mid-April, that it, that will essentially be 287G statewide, that will require sheriffs to report any immigrants in their center who don't have a legal status to ICE.
Right now, it's my understanding that some county sheriffs have sort of said, no, we're not going to do that, like the Dane County Sheriff. We're not going to just report everyone to Immigration and Custom Enforcement. And then some sheriffs have been sort of vocally saying, we will do that. So this proposal, Republican proposal, would force all sheriffs to do that. Is that correct?
Yes, and sheriffs still have a say-so in this. However, they risk a penalty. So they do risk losing about 15% of their budget, and they can lose more, but there is sort of a penalty or a punishment that goes involved in this, which is if they don't comply with this rule, that they risk in losing more funds, which is very contradictory, right? Because they're losing funds to do public safety, right? So even in the law, there's so many contradictions there, but again, it's part of the attacks that we're facing.
Thank you for sharing that and clearing that up, Luis. We have a caller on the line. Liz, welcome to A Public Affair.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the program. I just had a question about how people who, I'm not bilingual, but I would be, I want to support in any way possible. I didn't know if you had people who were part of a rapid response or something who would be willing to show up and at least be there and, just take phone videos or just stand up with people who might feel threatened, whether it's kids or wherever. I just don't know if you have ways that people can do that.
Thank you so much for the call, Liz. I'll let both Nandik and Luis respond. First to you, Luis.
Thanks so much, Liz. Thanks for your courage. And I hear a lot of concern in the tone of your voice. And thanks so much for standing up in a time like this. You may email us. You may email me at Luis, L-U-I-S, at VDLF.org. We also, Voz de la Frontera also has a general phone number that Nindy can give in a few seconds here. You may, talk to someone who is in Milwaukee, but they'll go ahead and refer either to Nindy or to myself. But as of right now, anything that is related to rapid response, you may email me at Luis, L-U-I-S, at VDLF.org. And also, our emergency line is bilingual. It is in English and Spanish. And we have trainings on Mondays and Tuesdays at 5:30. Mondays are the Spanish trainings for the crisis hotline. And then Tuesdays are the trainings in English. And so you may email if you would like to volunteer and be part of this crisis hotline. People, you know, sign up for a 2-hour shift daily or weekly. It's only a 2-hour shift. And the trainings in English are on Tuesdays at 4:30. And you may email Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at BDLF, Karen at BDLF, and we can go ahead and send you up for a training that lasts about an hour and a half for those who would like to be part of our crisis hotline.
Thank you, Luis. Nindi, ¿cuáles son maneras que la gente puede apoyar a las comunidades inmigrantes? ¿Hay otras maneras también?
Sí, tenemos otras formas de apoyar a la comunidad. Como Luis mencionó, la línea de emergencia es una línea bilingüe y entonces siempre estamos queriendo conseguir más y más voluntarios que quieran apoyar. Funciona las 24 horas del día y también es, como dije, es permitido que personas envíen fotos. La línea acepta fotos y videos. Si ellos han visto como alguna interacción, lo pueden enviar fotos si han grabado, ¿no?, o capturado ese momento. Entonces, la línea de emergencia es una opción. También el programa de Conoce Tus Derechos es otra opción. Sabemos que tenemos migrantes en el estado de Wisconsin viniendo de diferentes partes del mundo. Entonces, también la línea de emergencia, Conoce Tus Derechos, es una opción ser un entrenador.
Perfecto, gracias. Nindik was just talking about two ways. The emergency line needs volunteers. Luis was talking about that as well. And then also the Voces de la Frontera is looking for volunteers to help with the Know Your Rights program. And Luis has just shared with me the Voces de la Frontera general number for questions, which you could call if you're interested in offering support, 414-643-1620. Is that, Luis, where you would send people who are interested in getting involved, that number?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Yep. Okay. So, and if no one answers from 9 to 5, then they can leave a voicemail, and then we always get an email or a message as well, you know, with the information that someone is seeking. So, yes, that's the best phone number to call. As of right now, it is 414-643-1620.
Thank you. Nindik, vamos a regresar a ti. Háblanos del próximo Día Sin Inmigrantes y el propósito de esta acción. I asked Nindik to tell us about the upcoming or the next Day Without Immigrants and the marches that Voces de la Frontera usually organizes around International Workers' Day in May.
Sí, mayo 1 y mayo 2 van a ser dos días de acción acá en el estado de Wisconsin. La marcha de mayo 1 es una marcha a nivel nacional, es un llamado a la acción a nivel nacional. Esa marcha de mayo 1 lo hacemos para celebrar a nuestros trabajadores, también nuestros trabajadores migrantes. Y este año la marcha toma lugar en la ciudad de Milwaukee. A partir de las 9 de la mañana estamos ahí en la ciudad de Milwaukee y listos para marchar hasta el Tribunal Federal que está ahí en la ciudad de Milwaukee. Algunas de las demandas son pues el alto a la criminalización del inmigrante, ¿verdad? Y también un alto a la separación familiar con todas estas separaciones familiares que se han producido, ¿verdad? Muchas de ellas de formas arbitrarias. También estamos marchando para alzar nuestras voces y decir que estamos defendiendo Medicaid y todos los beneficios que nuestra comunidad, ¿verdad?, están recibiendo y que quieren ser cortados los fondos. Marchamos por un sistema de educación pública, ¿verdad?, que sea posible. No queremos los recortes de taxes a los millonarios y también estamos marchando para defender nuestras ciudades santuarios. que en este momento pues están teniendo muchos retos y desafíos, pero marchamos también para defender a nuestras ciudades santuarios. Es un día de huelga, se hace el llamado a nivel nacional, entonces también en Wisconsin será un día de huelga. Y mayo 2...
con permiso, sí. voy yeah. a compartir un poco sobre lo que me has dicho. So May 1st is a national day of support for immigrants and marches. Voces de la Frontera is organizing a march at 9 a.m. in Milwaukee, marching to the federal building, demanding the end to the criminalization of migrants and family separation. It's also a one-day strike for workers. And they're also calling for not to support tax cuts for billionaires and to defend sanctuary cities as well as defend Medicaid and public education. Okay, gracias. Y el 2 de mayo, por favor, Nindig.
Sí, el 2 de mayo es una tradición que se está haciendo en la ciudad de Madison ahora. Empezó siendo organizado por los estudiantes de las escuelas como la high school y también de la universidad. Mayo 2 también es un día sin inmigrantes y será un rally acá en la ciudad de Madison. Nos vamos a concentrar a las 3 de la tarde en Birchland Park y vamos a marchar hacia el Capitolio. Mayo 2 es un día de acción regional para hacer alzar nuestras voces y decir necesitamos licencias de conducir para todos que sean restauradas en el estado de Wisconsin, institution para nuestros jóvenes justicia, ¿verdad?, educativa, ¿verdad?, el acceso a la educación y el alto a la colaboración entre los policías, nuestros alguaciles, nuestra policía local y inmigración por medio también del programa 287G.
Gracias, Nindik. And so on May 2nd in Madison, it has become traditional also to do a rally and march. That'll be meeting at 3 p.m. at Birmingham Park, marching to the Capitol, demanding driver's licenses and in-state tuition for all immigrants, as well as several other demands. It's always an uplifting occasion. I've been there myself, and it's an important time to go and show support if folks are able to get out and do that at this point. And that kind of brings me to my last question, as we unfortunately run out of time today, Luis. It would be great if you could share what motivates you and what gives you hope in this difficult time. What keeps you going?
Yes, it's like the resilience that I was sharing about the 13-year-old who's doing his part. It's like the person who just called, you know, Liz, who called and is wanting to take action. Since I was a kid, I mean, I moved to the U.S. I was 8 years old, and it's been the outpouring of support of folks who are U.S. citizens, who are not, who are building community, who are able to be in solidarity with others. And so I know that this is something that we didn't want. You know, we never, you know, some of us just didn't even imagine, and some of us were fearing that this will happen. But it is an opportunity to create community, to build, you know, solidarity, to be with one another. And that's what keeps me going.
Gracias, Luis. That's Luis Velasquez, Deputy Director of Organizing, or excuse me, I think you have a new title now, Statewide Organizer for Voces de la Frontera and Voces de la Frontera Action. Thanks so much for being with us today, Luis.
Muchas gracias. Thank you so much, Douglas. Thank you, everyone.
Gracias a ti. Y también, Nindik, tenemos un minuto. Si quieres compartir algo que te da esperanza o motivación en estos tiempos difíciles.
Sí, creo que como muchos migrantes en este país, lo que me mantiene concentrada, ¿verdad?, en seguir adelante es la fuerza que nosotros tenemos como migrantes. Y también la posibilidad de adaptarnos a diferentes retos, ¿verdad?, y encararlos en cierta manera con un espíritu que va a seguir luchando y que no se va a dar por vencido.
Gracias, Nindik. That is Nindik Figueredo, logistics coordinator for Voces de la Frontera and Voces de la Frontera Action, who is saying that what motivates her is the power of being together and the resilience and ability to adapt that she in sees and experiences as part of immigrant communities here in Wisconsin. Muchas gracias por compartir, Nindy. Gracias por estar aquí. And thank you all for listening today. If you have appreciated today's show, please share it on a Public Affairs Online Archive or wherever you find your podcasts. I'm your host, Douglas Haynes, and I'd like to thank today's engineer, Andrew Thomas, producer Sarah Gabler, news director Shali Pittman, and receptionist Amy Lutsky. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today on A Public Affair here at WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Stay tuned for Madison Bookbeat. We come and listen and support it. Une fois que t'as senti le nom, tu t'allonges sous ton dos. Yeah. Tu es le temps. Tu te lances que tu pilotes. Tu t'enfonces dans ta main. C'est important.
Recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and support it. 6 foot 6 above sea level.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. A new global economic forecast has predicted that the trade wars unleashed by Donald Trump will hit growth and raise inflation around the world. The OECD's chief economist, Alvaro Pereira, told the BBC the organisation was cutting growth forecasts for almost all major economies.
So we re-estimated now new forecasts for the world economy, and we downgraded almost every single country that we had before. So right now we expect that the world economy will grow about 3% next year and 3.1% this year.